In January 2008, 41-year-old Tati Rogers visited a supermarket in Wrexham, North Wales, and then vanished without a trace.
It looked very suspicious, as if she just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Tati's friends knew she wouldn't travel far or be gone for long without making contact.
There was a point where we just thought, that's it now. There is no chance of her coming back. Something had happened and we weren't going to see her again.
To find Tati, detectives would have to use all their cunning and draw their prime suspect into a high-stake game of cat and mouse.
We had to create a scenario where he believed we knew more than we actually did. We just didn't know whether he'd take the bait.
Close to Wrexham in North Wales lies the suburb of Gwersyth.
Gwersyth is quite large. There's a lot of new building work going on, a lot of new housing, very posh, really, bringing a lot of new people to the area. It's quite an up-and-coming, aspirational place to live.
The area was home to Indonesian-born Irma Tati Rogers, known as Tati to her friends.
I describe Tati as a very loyal friend. She's a very warm and loving person.
She liked music, she liked sightseeing, she liked dancing. Tati is a very strong woman. She got a heart of gold.
Tati moved to Wales after meeting her husband when he was travelling through Southeast Asia in 1996.
Although Tati was far away from home, she made sure that her culture was very much part of her day-to-day life. She had a large circle of friends, a lot of which were either Indonesian or Southeast Asian.
We became very close friends and we support each other because at that time, not many people from Asia came to this country. I treat her like one of my sisters.
Tati loved her life in Wales and enjoyed working in a local dairy, but was devastated when her marriage ended in divorce in 2004.
I always said to her, if your marriage broke down, it's not the end of the world.
Tati had to rebuild her life. She found a flat in Gwersyth. She slowly found that life wasn't too bad living on her own. In time, she learned to enjoy herself again.
Eventually, months after the end of her marriage, Tati even started dating again.
She didn't actually tell me at the time. Because of her religion, I think, she didn't want to be known as somebody who went out dating.
She don't want to get hurt again and she very careful to commit to somebody else. She wants somebody to look after her, somebody that can love her the way she is. What she's craving for is happiness.
Slowly but surely, Tati regained her confidence and was looking to the future.
Towards the end of 2007, I felt that Tati had established a really nice life for herself. Tati just wanted to be happy with a husband and hopefully children, and to settle down with somebody loyal, faithful and respectful as she was.
And with a new year to look forward to, Tati Rogers was full of optimism. Over Christmas and New Year, Tati was keen to catch up with as many friends as possible. So on Friday the 4th of January 2008, she confirmed that she would visit her friend's house for lunch the next day.
Tati sent us a text message. The text said, just to let you know, see you tomorrow around 1:30. See you soon. Love, T.
It was a belated Christmas dinner, really. Tati was bringing some Indonesian food and Hannah had made stuff as well, so looking forward to seeing her again.
But the next day, Tati was uncharacteristically late.
At 1:30, when Tati didn't show up, we thought it was a bit strange because Tati was always very punctual. She would always text or call you to let you know that she'd been delayed for whatever reason.
2 o'clock came and went, and I said, well, this isn't right, you know, because she would have phoned us, where is she? She must have, you know, perhaps the bus has been delayed or something.
We thought, well, it's a bit strange. We'll send her a message. just to say, are you all right? Are you on your way?
As time passed by, Hannah and her mother became even more concerned.
About an hour later, we really were worried and we kept on texting, even phoned the house a few times, no answer.
We had reached a point where we had to do something to find out what had happened, which is why my mum suggested that it was best if we go over and check on her ourselves.
Hannah and I drove down to Gwersyll. Got there, knocked at the door, no answer, called through the letterbox. I went round to the back of the flat and peered in through the window. No sign of anybody.
It was obvious something was wrong.
Perhaps she'd passed out for some reason. So we were worried for her safety, really, worried in case she was ill.
Troubled by her friend's disappearance, Anne made a suggestion.
When there was no answer, I said, we must go to the police.
And my first response was, well, you know, they won't take this seriously. She's not turned up for lunch, you know. She's not gone missing. We just haven't seen her for a couple of hours.
But Anne was insistent.
I said, well, no, things aren't right. We have left it a while. We've left it since 2 o'clock this afternoon. There was something wrong. I said, we must go to the police straight away.
On Saturday, the 5th of January, 2008, Tatty Rogers failed to arrive at a friend's house in Wrexham, North Wales. Worried for her safety, Tatty's friends immediately contacted the police.
We went to Wrexham police station straight away. When we were waiting at the police station, we were talking about what could have happened.
We just had no idea, really, at that point, what was wrong. Was she having some problem with a boyfriend that we weren't really aware of? Or, as she'd lost quite a lot of weight recently, had her health deteriorated? We were just going through different ideas.
But nothing could explain why Tatty had failed to make any contact.
She would have phoned us, always at the back of her mind. She would have let us know. She wouldn't have just taken off into the blue and not told us she was going.
Although Tatty had only been missing for a few hours, police officers accepted she could have fallen ill or had an accident.
The officers realised that something wasn't right because for her to go missing in such circumstances was completely out of character, totally unheard of, really. We were concerned that she may have fallen ill inside the house and she may need medical attention.
Initially, the local police team decided to visit the area of Gwersyll where Tatty Rogers lived, and having knocked at a few addresses, they'd gleaned no information to establish where she was at this time. So the decision was made to force entry into the flat, ensure that she wasn't in there.
But once inside, officers could find no sign of Tatty or of any suspicious activity.
It fully looked like Tatty had gone out for a short time. Tatty's coat was there, but the food was still on the stove, which would suggest that she intended to come back later on in the evening. There didn't appear to have been any struggle or anything like that that would suggest she'd been taken against her will.
Eager to uncover any evidence that could explain Tatty's disappearance, the detective started to search her home.
One of our main priorities is to find out who is the last person to have seen Irma Tatty Rogers, who her associates was she in a relationship, and a colleague of ours had recovered a little red diary which contained names and contact telephone numbers. Our intention was to contact every single one of these persons to glean as much information as we could.
Meanwhile, they also discovered an unexpected clue which revealed Tatty's movements the previous evening.
One of the things we did find in the flat was a receipt for a local supermarket. And we knew from the time on that that she would have been in this local supermarket about 20 to 5 on the Friday evening.
Detectives immediately visited the supermarket and were able to watch CCTV footage of Tatty recorded 24 hours earlier.
We could see that she was walking freely and she didn't appear to be any pain or have any mobility problems. She appeared OK and fit and well.
Here was a person carrying out a normal activity on her way home from a local supermarket carrying her daily shopping.
The footage confirmed that Tati was alive and well in the early evening of Friday, the 4th of January 2008. As the investigators conducted their inquiries, they learnt more about Tati and the life she led.
We put together a number of theories about what could have happened to her. She could have gone off visiting a friend that we didn't know about. She could have gone off travelling.
Has she just disappeared out of her own free will? Has she been involved in an accident of some description? Or worst-case scenario, has she been abducted and murdered?
We got a great deal of cooperation from all Tati's friends, and she came across to me as a very popular person with a good circle of friends who kept herself busy and was just getting on with her life, really.
But as word of Tati's disappearance spread, her friends became increasingly anxious.
We became worried about her, you know, wondering where she gone. I mean, it's harsh to say, but I was so sure that something really bad happened because she never go anywhere such a long time.
By contacting everyone whose number Tati kept listed in her diary, detectives were able to find out who was the last to see her.
We were able to identify quite quickly that the last person who'd had telephone contact with Tati was a male called Lukasz Respondek.
Lukasz Respondek was a Polish national who moved to the area in 2004 and became friends with Tati when they worked together in a local dairy.
Initially, Lukasz Respondek came on his own from Poland to the Wrexham area. However, when it was decided that his wife and the two sons travel over to Wrexham, Irma Tati Rogers offered her flat in Gwersyll as accommodation for them. It was quite clear that she was a good friend of Lukasz Respondek.
Lukasz explained that he'd spent Christmas in Poland with his family, but returned to Wales on Friday the 4th of January. His wife and children were planning to come back separately a few days later.
He informed us that he had a gift for Irma Tati Rogers, and he decided as soon as he arrived back in Wrexham that he'd deliver his present for her.
Encouraged by this vital new information, detectives visited Lukasz at home.
He outlined to us that she was quite happy to see him at her house and asked him if she could have a lift in his car as she intended to visit some friends in the Wrexham area. He was happy to do it and he dropped her off on the Mould Road in Wrexham, just near the football ground. She got out of the car, thanked him and waved him goodbye.
This was the only information we had of Tati being seen by anyone after she'd been to the supermarket earlier on in the evening.
Keen to do everything he could to help the police, Lukasz continued to provide valuable assistance.
Whilst at the address, we could see certain items, his mobile phone, a laptop computer, a satellite navigation device, and a camera. And we asked him if we could have them. We thought that these items could assist our investigation.
He even agreed to provide the detectives with his car for use in forensic examinations.
He was very, very helpful. And he was very open with us and couldn't do enough to tell us what had happened that Friday evening.
As the week progressed, Detective Chief Inspector Jones ordered a full, intensive forensic search of Tati's one-bedroomed flat.
Primarily, our search was just to establish if we could actually find out where she had gone. So we looked for fingerprints, and we also obtained items which we knew Tati would have used, which would give us her DNA profile, such as toothbrushes. It didn't look like there was a scene of an assault, so straight away you didn't actually see areas of clean-up or areas where there was blood staining.
The crime scene investigators painstakingly scrutinised Tati's home.
We then concentrated our examination in Tati's bedroom, and when we examined the bed, we found evidence of sexual activity, namely semen.
The discovery came as a surprise to the officers.
When we found the semen mark in Tati's flat, this gave the inquiry a new dimension because we did know that Tati was not involved with anyone in a serious relationship, and we knew by the way that she lived her life that that was unlikely.
Tati was very religious, and her friends thought it was doubtful she would consummate a relationship outside marriage.
We sent the samples off for further analysis, but unfortunately it takes a few weeks, so all we could do is wait.
By the end of January 2008, a month after Tati went missing, Hannah and Zal were still struggling to come to terms with her sudden disappearance.
Without knowing 100% for sure what happened to her, we couldn't let go of her, couldn't grieve, couldn't say goodbye. And although really you feel this person isn't going to come back and you're not going to see them again, there's always that tiny bit of hope.
The police didn't find her yet, and then it took like a couple of months, it's still the same. We don't know what's happening.
Tati's family in Indonesia were also desperate for any news.
As you can imagine, it was horrific for them to hear about it. Their response to the news was disbelief.
Analysis of Lucas's computer equipment was carried out by the North Wales Police High Tech Crime Unit. They uncovered some disturbing evidence.
Our high-tech crime unit had been examining the computer to see if there was anything on there whatsoever that would give us any traces or clues to what had happened to Tati Rogers.
When his computer was examined, a number of indecent images of children was found on his laptop.
The discovery immediately changed everything.
This was a very unexpected development in the investigation, bearing in mind we'd been given the computer with Lucas Respondek's consent.
Following the discovery, Respondek was arrested and charged for the possession of illegal images of children. He was then released on bail pending the subsequent trial, which was set to take place later in the year.
This was a separate investigation and clearly it couldn't be delayed while our other investigation into the disappearance of Irma Tati Rogers was going on.
This shocking discovery immediately implied that Respondek's claims could not be trusted.
Once we'd established that these images had been found on his computer, his whole character, persona, threw us in a different direction.
Finding the images of child abuse encouraged the high-tech crime unit to conduct deep searches of Respondek's computer. And after days of relentless analysis, they were amazed to uncover more damning evidence.
On the Sunday following Tati's disappearance, on the Friday, that Lucas Respondek had been looking at search engines to look at what happens to buried bodies and how long bodies take to rot.
When you hear of those sort of terms being used, I don't think it's too hard to put two and two together.
Even though we still didn't have a body at that time and we still didn't have anything else to suggest what had happened to her, Lucas Respondek was someone who was of significance in the disappearance of Irma Tati Rogers.
Circumstantial evidence was slowly mounting against him, but detectives still had a long way to go before they could charge Respondek.
We knew that Lucas Respondek had had the opportunity and the ability to cause serious harm to Tati, but we just didn't know and couldn't speculate what the motive was.
In the absence of obvious malicious intent, the detectives needed to find out everything they could about Lucas Respondek.
We did an awful lot of work looking at how he lived his life, his background, everything he'd done since he'd come to the UK from Poland.
We established that he was a skilled electrician with no criminal record or convictions. There was nothing of real notes about him.
Respondek insisted he and Tati were simply good friends, but an inspection of his digital camera cast doubt over the true nature of their relationship.
Subsequent examination of the card then showed us quite a few photographs of Tati Rogers in different states of undress. Glamour-type photographs, which again suggested that there may have been something sexual between Lucas Respondek and Irma Tati.
The possibility that Lucas and Tati were having an intimate relationship was an unexpected development.
Lucas Respondek had made it clear to us from the outset that there was no form of relationship, whether that's sexual or otherwise.
In February 2008, the detectives finally received the results of the DNA analysis, which identified the donor of the semen found in Tati's bed.
The semen stain we'd found on the mattress was actually a match to Lucas Respondek.
While still on bail, the detectives interviewed the ever-cooperative Lucas Respondek.
He gave an innocent explanation. He was staying at the address. His wife came over from Poland. They had sex at Irma Tati Rogers' home address, and that's how his DNA had been found on the mattress.
Lucas Respondek's wife confirmed they previously had sex in Tati's bed, but the detectives remained suspicious.
We couldn't discount at that time that there had been a relationship, even though he told us that there wasn't.
Over the following weeks, North Wales police officers continued to examine every aspect of Respondek's life. Eventually, analysis of his financial records revealed a series of unusual purchases made the day after Tati was last seen.
During the course of Saturday, the 5th of January, we know that Lucas Respondek had made two visits to the DIY store, and during the course of that day, he bought a number of items.
The information didn't reveal what Respondek had bought, but the detectives were provided with a list of catalogue numbers that would identify each item.
One of the officers who'd been on the investigation was then given the task of visiting the DIY store to actually get the information as to what had been bought.
I remember having a phone call off my colleague, and he basically told me, "You're not going to believe this."
Detective Constable Alad Hughes was stunned when told what had been on Respondek's unusual shopping list. On the evening of Friday, the 4th of January 2008, 41-year-old Tati Rogers was caught on CCTV in her local supermarket and never seen in public again. Only one man claimed to have seen her after this time, a man detectives believed could be responsible for Tati's disappearance. His name was Lucas Respondek. Investigating officers were shocked when they discovered what items he had bought from a DIY store the day after Tati was last seen.
He'd purchased round sheets, double-sided tape, gloves, snap-off blades and a spade. My colleague basically told me, "You're not going to believe this." He's bought a body disposal kit.
And they weren't the only purchases Respondek had made that day.
He'd also visited another store close by and he'd bought a large suitcase. It was clear to me that he'd picked that suitcase because it was the biggest one you could possibly buy, and there would be no reason why you would need one that large other than to dispose of somebody.
The detectives even recovered CCTV footage of Respondek purchasing the items.
The only thing I could conclude from this was that Lucas Respondek had bought all those items to get rid of Tati Rogers' body and use the suitcase to dispose of it.
In April 2008, the discovery of Respondek's shopping trips provided detectives with the evidence needed to arrest him for Tati's murder. But when questioned, Respondek provided explanations for purchasing each of the items.
He explained that the suitcase was purchased to replace a broken one, and that the items he'd purchased from the do-it-yourself store was for basically home decorating by him.
Meanwhile, crime scene investigators began a thorough forensic search of Respondek's home.
We went into Respondek's house with a specific strategy to look for the items that had been purchased, the body disposal kit, locate them, recover them, and submit them for analysis whilst he was still in custody.
The crime scene investigators found all the items they were looking for. However, none of them had been used.
This was obviously a surprise, because why would he have gone to the trouble of buying all those items, which are not associated to each other and are not for, say, a specific DIY job, they're all unique in their own way. Would he not use them and he just keep them in the house?
Whilst the detectives considered their options, the crime scene investigators continued their search.
We weren't only looking for who was responsible for her going missing, because if we could establish where a crime scene was, then maybe that would lead us to where Tati was.
The team hoped they might find evidence that Tati had been murdered in the house.
We located blood visually, which we swabbed, and we also examined other areas for blood staining with chemicals, and we took samples from those areas too. We examined all those different swabs, and none of it turned out to be Tati's.
After 3 days of questioning, the detectives failed to make any progress with Lucas Respondek.
The decision to charge in such a significant case is one that's taken by the Crown Prosecution Service. And when we outlined the circumstantial evidence that we had, the decision was made that we didn't have sufficient evidence to charge and we had to let Lucas Respondek go.
Over the following weeks, investigating officers continued to evaluate the importance of the body disposal kit.
We came up with the idea that could he have replaced the items that he'd originally bought and used once he knew the police were looking at him?
Inspired, the police officers reviewed the timeline of events and compared them with Respondek's financial records.
We knew that following the first contact the police had had with him on the Wednesday after Tati's disappearance, he'd made a withdrawal on Thursday morning of £200 cash.
Colleagues returned to the local do-it-yourself store and trawled through the CCTV that was available for the period in question. And as it happened, Lucas Respondek was found again within the store buying duplicate items.
We also know that a suitcase was sold at the same store within about 15 minutes of him buying the duplicate spade from the DIY store.
The purpose of the purchases was basically to cover up his bank card transactions at the do-it-yourself store.
Finally, the detectives were convinced that they had enough evidence to prosecute Lucas Respondek.
We arrested him again on suspicion of murder, and these new facts were put to him, and they were just met with a no-comment response in interview.
He provided the interviewing officers with prepared statements, basically denying the offence.
The detectives were left frustrated by Respondek's lack of cooperation.
And unfortunately, again, the decision was made that he would have to be released at that time because we were still dealing with an investigation where we had no body, we had no forensic evidence, and we had no witnesses at that time.
By autumn 2008, the investigation had gone cold.
It's a very difficult situation in the inquiry at that time because there was absolutely no information coming in. There were no sightings, no contact with any friends whatsoever. We were very, very confident we were dealing with the right person, and we were also confident that we're dealing with a murder investigation.
Detective Chief Inspector Jones made a decision.
The priority in the inquiry then was obviously to find the body of Tati Rogers because we knew when we found her, that would be the evidence that we had that this was, in fact, a murder. The key thing was finding out where the body was.
As Respondek had purchased a shovel during his trip to the DIY store, the police officers were keen to identify where he might have buried Tati's body.
It is quite common for a murder suspect to return to the scene of the crime to basically check that everything is intact.
What we did then was we put into place a surveillance operation. We were trying to build up a picture of what the movements were. Was he taking any unusual routes? Were there any areas that were off the beaten track that he'd keep visiting? And just seeing what he got up to on a day-to-day basis.
Before long, Respondek was being watched 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
He would use diversionary tactics, possibly to try and make sure that there was nobody following him. Sometimes he would take double the time he would normally take to get from A to B. He would take a very long route to get somewhere he could get to very quickly.
This behaviour would suggest that he was nervous about something, which in itself was very, very suspicious.
Over the following weeks, the detectives were able to compile an in-depth dossier of all Respondek's movements.
What was encouraging was that he did seem to be continually visiting the same area. But the difficulty we had there was that the area was so vast that the body could have been anywhere.
Gradually, the reconnaissance enabled the detectives to identify an area of farmland close to Respondek's home in nearby Erddig, where they believed Tati might be buried.
Whilst Respondet was under surveillance, we took the opportunity to search the areas covertly that we'd identified as possible deposition sites. So we did our parameter searches, our fields, such as this one, and then any areas such as undergrowth, anything that looked slightly disturbed, we'd excavate it and eliminate it from the inquiry.
The area was approximately 1 square mile in size, and in the 9 months that had passed since Tatty had disappeared, the farmland had changed dramatically.
We brought in search advisers who explained to us that the average person can only carry a dead body a certain distance, whether that be from a gateway or from a stile or from a lay-by. So bearing that in mind, we set our search parameters to a certain area. So for example, from a gateway such as this, if we were actually conducting our search, we set our search parameters and we'd search towards the hedgerow rather than out towards the field.
Whenever surveillance officers confirmed that Respondec was at a safe distance, the crime scene investigator and her team started to explore the area.
When we identified an area that needed excavating, the archaeologists would cut a trench through the area, and you could clearly see through the changes in the soil, the changes in the layers, whether that area had actually been disturbed, and you could clearly identify as well whether that was a possible grave site. The difficulties we had was as it was getting colder, the ground was becoming more difficult to dig. But as the year went on, it was coming up to the time that Tatty went missing. So the vegetation, the foliage, everything was looking quite similar to how it was when she first went missing.
Meanwhile, in October 2008, Respondec appeared in court to face the charges for the possession of illegal images of children.
He was sentenced for the possession of the indecent images to 32 weeks in prison, which then gave us an opportunity to do more searching in the area. With Lucas Respondec not being around, we did have the opportunity to employ some different techniques in the field. And this included metal detectors, search dogs, and also using aerial photography of the scene to see if we could locate anything. We still did keep it covert so that there was no information getting out that may leak back to him.
But despite carrying out painstaking searches to find Tatty's body, the crime scene investigators were unable to progress the case any further.
The searching we did in October, November, December 2008 still revealed nothing. We were continuously searching and we still didn't know where Tatty was, and it was becoming increasingly frustrating.
In January 2009, Lucas Respondec was released early from prison. Once again, the North Wales Police's surveillance team monitored his every move.
He didn't waste any time whatsoever in revisiting the same site in Erddig and kept going again and again, looking around that area to see if anything had happened while he'd been away.
Having spent months searching the Erddig area covertly, Detective Chief Inspector Jones felt the time had come for an alternative, more provocative approach.
We needed to force the initiative, really, and the only way of doing that was by trying to convince Respondec that we knew we were in the right area, and it would only be a matter of time before we did find something that would incriminate him. In doing that, we hoped that it would provoke him into taking some action that would lead us to Tatty's body.
And so the investigation team hatched an intricate plan, announcing to the press that they were digging up fields in order to recover Tatty Rogers' body.
Would he take the bait? Would he go and try and find her? And would he try and dig her up? Or would he try and leave the country? So it was a very, very tense time, really, while we were waiting to see what he would do next.
After weeks of planning, the detectives launched the operation on Thursday, the 19th of March, 2009.
It was a fantastic opportunity to get a reaction from Respondec, but also gave us the opportunity to search and examine areas more thoroughly that we hadn't been able to do previously, which we wanted to eliminate them from the inquiry.
Only hours after the launch of the operation, the surveillance team realised Respondec, whose appearance had altered dramatically throughout the previous months, had heard the news of the search.
It became quite apparent that he had taken the bait. His behaviour became erratic, and he did load his car with what appeared to be his personal belongings. So there was the thought, is he going to disappear from the Wrexham area?
The surveillance team followed Respondec, but realised his destination was much closer to home.
One of the first things Lucas Respondek did was actually go up to a high vantage point at the local colliery that was there. That reassured us the fact that he still wanted to have that control where he could see what was going on.
He went out and bought camouflage clothing, the trousers, the jacket and the hat. He had a pair of binoculars with him and he had basically dug himself into the ground, overlooking the fields, keeping an eye on what the officers searching were doing.
Over the following days, Respondek became less erratic and occasionally seemed indifferent to the massive search taking place.
Even though he was still interested in what we were doing, he didn't seem to have the same urgency to watch us at every minute. It gave me the indication that we were obviously in the wrong field. He was quite confident that we weren't going to find her in the area we were searching.
On Sunday, the 22nd of March 2009, 4 days into the search, Lucas Respondek failed to appear at the colliery.
One of the surveillance officers asked if I wanted to go up onto the colliery site so I could actually see what Respondek was seeing, see it on his perspective, and give me a better indication of where the search parameters should be. There were areas where we were digging which you couldn't see from top of the colliery, so that made me realise he was up there for a reason. He was up there because he could see the field in which she was buried, and we weren't in that field.
In order to test her theory, Lisa formulated a plan.
We waited until Respondek was back up on the colliery side, and then I walked through this field with a police officer and an archaeologist to identify any areas that could possibly be a body deposition site. We came round and we actually got to this point here. It was totally different to other areas of the field. As a priority, the area needed to be excavated. We discussed this with the archaeologist and police officer, who made the decision that we'd return the following morning. As he was standing up there watching us, we discussed what we were going to do the following day, but we would never have predicted what happened next.
Fourteen months after the disappearance of Tati Rogers, detectives attempting to conclude a frustrating investigation set in motion an intricate plan. Their aim was to provoke their prime suspect, Lucas Respondek, into revealing the whereabouts of Tati's body. A potential burial site had been identified, and detectives were pleased to find out Respondek was on the move.
We were being continually fed with information from the surveillance teams about what he was doing, and his behaviour changed. It was erratic, changing from minute to minute. We knew then that something was going to happen.
He had come out of his current home address, dressed in his camouflage gear, carrying a spade.
On Sunday, the 22nd of March 2009, detectives finally got the reaction they'd hoped for.
To see him actually walking down the lanes was both exciting and frustrating as well, because we knew full well that we couldn't follow him down there.
The danger is always getting too close to a person and basically spooking them, and then we may never know where he'd buried the body of Irma Tati Rogers.
It was then a matter of time deciding when we were going to intervene.
The officers made the decision to leave Respondek in the field to see how things developed.
He knew roughly where he was, but it was a really, really tense time, not being able to have control of that, and then just waiting for him to appear.
The hope was that he was going to come out of the field carrying the body of Irma Tati Rogers.
3 hours later, just after midnight, Respondek reappeared.
We got the further information that he wasn't actually carrying anything, which put us in a very difficult position because we didn't know what he'd done in the fields.
Desperate to avoid jeopardising the operation, the detectives let Respondek go, following him from a safe distance.
He went back to his home address, showered, and then went round a couple of homes of associates.
We didn't know exactly what he was doing. He was unnerved, and it was clear that something had had an effect on him, and he was seeking advice about what he should do.
But eventually, at approximately 3 a.m, Respondek surprised everyone.
In the early hours of the Monday morning, he then came to the police station in Wrexham, and he told us that he wanted to take us to the body of Tati Rogers.
Lucas Respondek was immediately arrested on suspicion of murder.
was quite surreal that he was handing himself into the police, informing officers that he wanted to disclose where he'd buried the body.
He didn't say that he'd killed her or he was responsible for her murder.
As dawn broke over Wrexham, detectives and forensic experts from North Wales Police headed over to Erthig with their suspect, Lucas Respondek.
He just seemed to be relieved at that time, to get it off his chest and to show us actually where the grave was.
Ultimately, Lucas Respondek had gone to the field to dig up and remove the body of Irma Tati Rogers. But once it started, he realised that it was an impossible task.
The field looked very different following Respondek's interference.
The area had been disturbed and you could quite clearly see he dug a few feet down and he'd exposed the lower leg area. And then he'd obviously given up digging. It was quite unusual that he would choose this area as a body deposition site due to the fact that the soil has actually got a consistency of clay, which is extremely difficult to dig through. However, on an investigation point of view, it was really good for us because the clay preserved Tati to a certain extent, which really helped the investigation.
While crime scene officers began to recover Tati's body, detectives started questioning Lucas Respondek.
He said that he was not responsible for the death of Irma Tati Rogers. He outlined the fact that on his return to the UK, he wanted to go round to Irma Tati's house to give her a Christmas present. She said she wasn't feeling very well, so he offered his home address as somewhere that she could be looked after.
He took Tati back to his house. He showed her some photographs on the laptop that he'd taken on his camera. He said that she felt unwell and that he then went and had a shower.
Following his shower, he came downstairs and found Irma Tati Rogers dead on the floor in the lounge.
His response then was not what I would expect. By calling an ambulance or going to get help, he said he panicked, and that's when he left the body in the house all night, overnight, and indeed during the following day as well.
But the post-mortem on Tati's body revealed a more sinister truth.
During the autopsy, a full examination was undertaken to exclude any natural disease as far as we could. I paid particular attention to areas where I thought the possible cause of death may lie, in particular the neck.
Tati had been buried in a fetal position, leaving her neck well protected from the environment.
I came to the conclusion that there was evidence of damage to the neck structures, in particular the thyroid horns. And these are often broken in cases of manual strangulation. I could never be 100% conclusive, but I could say there were suspicious injuries to the neck consistent with strangulation.
And the cause of death explained the lack of any obvious crime scene.
Because he'd strangled her, it made sense that we hadn't found any signs of assault, any signs of clearing up, any signs of violence, because we were always looking for blood, always looking for bodily fluids, and in this case, they were absent.
When Respondek was asked how Tati could have suffered such an unusual injury, he claimed she must have hit her neck on a table when she collapsed.
When you took everything into account, it seemed extremely difficult to ascribe these injuries to a fall onto the edge of a coffee table.
We reviewed the examinations, reviewed our notes, reviewed the photographs, and it was absolutely nothing to substantiate what he was saying.
As detectives continued interrogating Respondek, Tati's friends were informed of the latest developments.
My mobile phone rang as soon as they said, "Hi, Hannah." And the tone of voice, I knew that they had found her. And I just made me crumble really inside. I'll never forget the words, you know, of him saying that we found her.
We just sat that day, all of us very sad, and then a relief as well, even though she's no longer with us, we found the body. That is a closure to us.
After 14 months, Detective Chief Inspector Jones's cunning strategy had resulted in securing the evidence needed to prosecute Lucas Respondek. But the question everyone was left asking was why?
I don't think we'll ever know why Lucas Responder did what he did, but we do know that he was responsible for the death of Irma Tatty Rogers. And there's the only person who can give us that information is Lucas Respondek, and he's chosen not to.
Tatty's friends believe Respondek killed her because she rejected his advances. But others think the couple may have been having a secret affair which had reached breaking point.
To me, it doesn't make sense. She would never have even contemplated getting together with a married man, and especially not one with a family.
In November 2009, Lucas Respondek stood trial for the murder of Irma Tatty Rogers at Mold Crown Court. He was found guilty and sentenced to life imprisonment. With Respondek behind bars, North Wales Police can reflect on one of the most arduous cases they have ever had to deal with.
For me personally, it was a very, very difficult case, and it was good to work with such a dedicated team on it. I think more than anything else, what they wanted to do was find Tatty, and also to be able to satisfy the friends and family of Tatty that we'd done everything we possibly could.
Meanwhile, Tatty's family and friends are now able to grieve for their beloved companion.
If it wasn't for him, she would still be here. She'd still be enjoying life. She may have a new husband. She may have a family by now, and she'd be having a lovely life.
She came to this country for a better life. It's just such a tragic. Her life is ending this way.